Hello, Iceland. My name is John Kelly. I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic. And my sobriety date is September 4th, 1999, and for that I'm very, very grateful. And I start this way everywhere I speak, and I do a lot of treatment centers and stuff like that. But I'm not one of these guys that walk around going, oh, I got me a job today, I'm so grateful. Or I got me a car today, I'm so grateful. God does not want to hear that from me. He wants to see me in action, right? He hears my thoughts, he hears my prayers, but he wants to see me take action. And what better way for me to show the God of my understanding, my gratitude for having a life today, than to get off my rear end and take this program to somebody who was dying just like I was. That's how I show God my gratitude. I've been sitting here for 2 days listening to everybody speak, and I woke up at like 3 a.m. to go to the restroom, and I'm laying in bed and I couldn't go back to sleep, and I'm like, God, I wish I could speak now. I had some good stuff at 3 a.m. I had good stuff. And then I broke a little cardinal rule. I don't ever drink coffee before I speak, and I've been sucking this stuff down since I woke up, and I'm just like, I don't know what's going to come out, but I said a little prayer before I talked to Chris Raymer. I saw him speak in Dallas like 2 weeks ago, and I asked him, I said, you know, I'm the Saturday night guy, you know, like, what am I supposed to talk about? And he's like, you know, Buckaroo, just pray and do what you do best. And thank God I made it to a group in Dallas, Texas, the primary purpose group. I made it to a group where the people were alive. They had the power. They had it. And that was something that I never had. And you know, we'll go through all my story tonight, and I won't beat you down with it today. Two in one day, that may. But, you know, my sponsor didn't ask me what I thought about what we were going to do. He told me what to do. And that is to get off my rear end and go out and help others. See what I could give back. And, today at my group, we're celebrating our 16th anniversary. And we have a little display. We had to remake it because we lost it a couple years ago. But we have a little display that they're going to make. And what it is I think the concept this year is a tree with many, many branches and many, many leaves. And in the knot of the tree, there's the AA symbol. And you got the roots going into the ground, but then you have the leaves on the tree, and that's the places that people from my group go in and around Dallas in the community to carry the message. And the fruits on this tree are the places that all over the world that people have our big book study guide. You know, and it's because of one man, my sponsor, Cliff Bishop, that I mean, think of the people that he's touched. I mean, he doesn't walk on water. He's not a saint. He's just a guy. But he's a guy who's passionate about this program and this fellowship. And to see the lives that have changed because of his work is truly, truly amazing. And I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for the people of that group and people like you. Because I spent a lot of years in the fellowship. I call it drinking coffee and playing grab ass. I did what the treatment centers told me. I didn't drink and I went to meetings. And I was slowly but surely dying. And I got sober, and my sponsor told me when to call him and where to be. And my deal is to reach out. And one of the places I go is a busted up treatment center near my home in Dallas. And it's not one of these places where you get these high bottom drunks. These are people that have been around the block. I mean, I got a stack of desire chips, you know, throughout the years. And it was put very clear to me that in order to keep what I have, I need to give it away. And the big book is very, very clear and very specific on this mission. Left to my own devices, I'm a selfish, self-centered, egotistical, you know what. And I cannot expect to keep what I have without giving it away. And how arrogant would it be of me to get what I got and to tell God thanks? I got it from here. It's not the way it rolls for me. I mean, let's look at, you know, before I go off way off on a tangent, I mean, let's just look at a couple things in the big book, what it says. If you go to Roman numeral 16 in my book, I don't know, somebody was going to, I think Arner was going to yell out the pages in your book. But Roman numeral 16 at the very bottom, it says, this seems to prove that one alcoholic could affect another as no non-alcoholic could. It indicated that strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, was vital to permanent recovery. Vital, of life. My job is to get off my rear end and take this to you. Somebody that wants it. I can't give it away unless you start to take it. And if you're willing to go to any length, I'll go to the mat for you. But see, just like if I want to get what these cats got, I got to do what they did. There is no gray area in my mind. If I want to get the solution that these folks got, I have to follow the precise instructions. And that's what it says in the foreword to the first edition. Precise instructions were given on how to recover. You flip over to page 14 in Bill's story. And this is... the bottom of page 14, it says, my friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. Faith without works was dead, he said. It's kind of like a Dr. Seuss, you know? And how appallingly true for the alcoholic. I am an alcoholic. I have to have a drink wherever I go. It says, for if an alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink. If he drank, he would surely die. With us, it is just like that. And then Bill goes on to say that, hey, I'm going to try other measures. Right? I'm going to try. I mean, you know, it's funny how I'll try these other measures, and I think, all that's left to do is, I guess I got to pray. That's in Texas, we call that ass backwards. I need to pray first. But Bill tells us, we're going to try other things. And I can just imagine Bill in 1934, he's sober, and you know, he's like jogging around Central Park. He's doing push-ups. He's going to the movie. He's doing everything imaginable to try to fix the funk that he's in. But what saved the day? Going to Towns Hospital and sharing his story. And we were driving around. I have no idea where I'm at in this town because we've taken every back road imaginable to get from point A to point B. If I had to walk home, I'm sorry, you know, I might as well just camp out right here. But in one of our journeys yesterday, we drove past the cemetery. And I'm reminded of what one of my buddies says, you know, you look at the tombstones and what is the most important thing on a tombstone? There's usually some information on there, but what's the most important thing? It's the dash. What I did with my life, or what those people did with my life. I've got a birth date and I've got a death date, but what did I do in between? My big book tells me that God is going to provide me with everything I need if I'm close to God and perform His work well. If you're brand new to this deal, let me say that again. My God is going to provide me with everything I need if I'm close to God and do the work. My sponsor told me to write that down. He says, that is your job description. Right? You know what a day timer is? And at the top of my little day timer, I don't write it. I am a lazy son of a gun. I don't write stuff out, you know? But I have it in my head. It's a mental picture. And on my day, I have that. And everything else, the work, my girlfriend, my family, everything else falls below that or is encompassed within that. But my job is to stay close to God and do the work. And I get what I need. And if God has given me what I need, what else do I need? I want a lot of things. You guys can see me afterwards. I'll tell you what I want, you know. I won't shock you ladies up here, you know. I mean, left to my own devices, I'm a freak, you know what I mean? You know, we go to how our working with others, and you know, this opening two paragraphs, it says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. See, he's alluding to the fact that I've got to take action and action and action. I mean, this is a group full of alcoholics. Is there anybody in this room that drank for like an hour a day? No. So how do I get the delusion that going to a meeting for an hour a day is going to cure what ails me? I drank intensively. I set the bar really, really, really high. What lengths was I willing to go to get that next bottle of vodka? I went to any lengths. In Bill's story, it says, simple but not easy, a price must be paid. And I'm here to tell you, especially if you're a newcomer, simple but not easy, a price must be paid. And believe me, brothers and sisters, a price is going to be paid one way or the other. I'm either going to pay the price and keep drinking until my death, or I'm going to pay the price and get off my rear and do the work and help you. But one way or the other, I'm paying. It says, carry this message to other alcoholics you can help when no one else can. My mama couldn't help me. I mean, there's God all in my family. I got three brothers that went to seminary. My sister's married to a minister. There's God everywhere. And I was the test kid, you know. Carrie was the last of five. I was the first of five, you know. You know, my parents are walking around going, oy vey, you know, what's up, you know. They couldn't help me. You know, I don't think I'll have Dr. Phil on TV here, but Dr. Phil could not help me, you know. I have this little nightmare. One of these days, I'm going to run into Dr. Phil, and I have this, because I kind of bashed the guy, you know. Oh, man. But look at that next paragraph. It says, life will take on new meaning. My life had no meaning. I was a bottom of the barrel, street level drunk. I had no meaning in life. Except the one that you gave me. To watch other people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. That's a mouthful. One of the coolest things, and I remember, I got my first guy to sponsor before I even had a 30-day chip. And I was at this little treatment center where I winded up. You know, in Texas, we have wind-up joints. Do y'all have those here? You know what a wind-up joint is? Well, you keep drinking, that's where you wind up, you know? And that's what this little treatment center is, you know? And my job wasn't to go to speak. I mean, if you would have told me that I was going to stand from a podium and speak to you when I got sober, I would have, I probably, you know, I wouldn't have lasted, you know? But my job was to show up and try to help out. And some guy that was about my age who I had seen before, he came up to me and asked me if I'd take him through the steps. And I called my sponsor and I said, "You're not going to believe what happened. This guy asked me to take him through the work." You know, and my sponsor's like, "Well, you didn't tell him no, did you?" I said, "No, but, you know, what do I do?" He's like, "John, you know how to read the book. Read the book." You know, and this whole chapter is chock full of information that's going to show me how to approach this new man. And it's not my job to convert him. My job is to lay out the program of action. If you want what I got, come on. If you got your own ideas, my hat's off to you. It's as simple as that. And thank God my sponsor keeps it simple, because I may not have made it. But shortly after I got this first guy, I get another guy, and this guy was mean. You know what I'm saying? He'd done a couple stints in prison. This guy was antisocial. He hated the world. You know? And we started doing the work. And you could see, I could see it because I worked with him closely, and I could see the change starting to happen. But he didn't like talking to you. He barely liked talking to me. You know, and part of my job is to hold him accountable, you know? And so, you know, I'd like, you know, he'd show up to the meeting and I make my guys get there way early. You know, my meeting, we have 3 meetings a week and we start at 7:30 and I don't want my guys getting there at 7:25. Get there at 6:30. Be a part of. Help set up the chairs. Help make the coffee. Stand by the door and greet people. Be a part of. Even if you got a 1 day sobriety, talk to that new guy. And Ben was slowly but surely starting to do this. And I remember we go down and Myers does his little rant and raving at this treatment center and everybody's fired up. There's about 40 guys and we all get outside for a smoke break and everybody's kind of huddled in twos and threes and everybody's got their big book open and guys are exchanging numbers. It's a cool thing. And I remember talking to Myers and my other buddies and I look off over in the distance. You're not going to believe it. This antisocial, mean-spirited person has got his big book open and he's giving out some information to some guys in the treatment. And I start to cry. You know, I don't have to worry about what God's going to do because God's going to do what he does. But to see a busted up drunk whose society had given up on, to see what God can do in his life because he was out of options, and to see him attempt to pass this on, I don't ever want to forget that. And I don't ever want to get so comfortable in the fellowship that I forget that stuff. See, I keep it real. My days are filled with being on the firing line. Y'all know what the firing line is, right? See, I may miss all that good stuff if I just, you know, we all clean up pretty good, right? And if I hang around you cats all day long, I may think that we're all fixed. But I go to those places, those seedy places, to see alcoholism up close and in my face. I don't have to go back through the work. I don't got to go do a step one again because I see step one every day. I see what this illness does, not only in the individuals, but their families. I see it every day, and I want to keep that. My responsibility as a sponsor doesn't end with the guys that I sponsor. My big book gives me plenty of information of how to approach their families. See, even if my guy doesn't want to stay sober, even if he can't stay sober, he is unwilling to do the work, he's created a lot of damage in his own household. And it's my responsibility to do what I can for them. It's my responsibility to at least offer them the opportunity, get them plugged into Al-Anon or Al-Ateen or Al-Atat or whatever it is. You know? I'm sure you've seen here the unfortunate happenings that, well, this guy's out and he's out carrying the message. And see, it's all in my motives. I may get in trouble. This is totally my view on things, so you can take it or leave it, right? But when I go to you and we sit down and we go through the work, I ain't there to fix you. My job is to lay out the information. But when I'm there, I have a sincere desire for you to get what I got or better. It just so happened God takes care of me. I don't have to worry about what God's going to do for me because God just does. But a little bitty shift, and I start attending these places or attending these meetings or doing this stuff because I need God to save me, that's a little change in my motive, don't you think? And I don't want to be like that. I know up close and personal what alcoholism did to me and my family. And I know up close and personal what God did and continues to do because I'm willing to go to any length. And just because I did it yesterday doesn't mean I'm going to be okay today. It's a very simple thing. I stay close to God. I do the work, no matter what, today. I hear a lot of speakers, and there's some folks in my group that started a Cocaine Anonymous group, and I hear a lot of people say a lot of things. And one of the things that I have trouble with that I hear is finding balance. Let's find balance. So I asked my sponsor about that, and he goes, John Kelly, he said, F balance. Your balance is to be on the firing line, no matter what. When I was brand new in sobriety, I had this job that I wasn't too happy about, and I didn't have any money, you know? I didn't have anything, you know. But he was working with me, and we're going through this work rapidly, you know, and it's sinking in, and I needed to call him. Not because I wanted his advice, but I wanted to hear what he would say. Because I'm looking in the big book, you know, at work, and I'm trying to see where this is all going to play out. And I call him because I want to hear what he has to say to me so I can pass that on. So I called and I whined a little bit. You know, they're not treating me right here at work. You know, my boss is a friggin' idiot and, you know, this and that and that. He's like, John, is that job you got? You had when you got sober a couple weeks ago? And I said, yeah. He just started laughing. He goes, those poor bastards should have fired you a long time ago. You don't even deserve to have a job. You get to have a job. If God was fair, if the streets were fair, your ass would be dead. See, I spend a lot of time seeing what you could do for me rather than what I could do for you. I spend a lot of time in my life seeing what I could suck out of life rather than giving back to life. You see, that's my job, and I try to do that every day. And I try to instill that in the guys that I work with. And I try to instill that if I get invited to speak places. Because, see, I spent a lot of years sitting on the sidelines. I heard a speaker a long time ago and said, hey, some of us are good 12-steppers, some of us aren't. You know, so if your deal's... And I took that and ran with it, you know. There's no accountability. I'm just going to show up for a meeting here and there and I'll be all right. That doesn't work for me. I'm the real alcoholic. Left to my own devices, I drink. If you're one of these cats that's sitting on your hands and you're too shy or whatever, ask for help. Don't miss this deal. It is the coolest thing in the world to have your whole material life falling apart. She left me. The job sucks. My car don't run. My dog died. My goldfish is sick. Everything's falling apart. And then to get a call from somebody or to have a commitment and go and sit down with another alcoholic and tell your story to them. That's my job. And when I was sober, that didn't click. That didn't seem... My life is falling apart. I can't pay my bills. I don't know what... I'm going to be living on the street sober. Well, John, did you pray? No. Maybe we should pray. And you have a dollar in your pocket, don't you? I said, yeah. He said, great. Let's pray. And take your little dollar and take your big book and go to the 24-hour club, get a cup of coffee, and talk to every MF-er that comes through that door. Call me in a couple hours when you're done. You would not believe the curse words that were going through my head, you know? I can't pay my bills. I don't have a girlfriend. My car sucks. And I'm supposed to... I asked God for help. And kicking and screaming. Evil and foreboding thoughts. Yeah. I went to this wind-up joint, and I got a cup of coffee, and I sat down and talked to every person that walked through that door. Hi, my name is John Kelly. It's kind of like when Dr. Bob went to Henrietta Cyberling's house and gave his wife, we're going to talk to this sucker for 15 minutes, and then we're leaving because I need a drink, you know? And they stayed talking to all hours of the night, you know, till 11:15 or whatever it was. I don't know how long I stayed at that place. But I tell you what, the wheels of my car didn't touch the ground and driving home, you know. I'm like, woo! This is what it's all about. So what did that prove to me? It proved one thing, that God takes care of me. Kicking and screaming, moaning and bitching. I prayed and I took some actions. Actions that seemed incongruent with what would work, but I took the actions that I did not yet believe, and God just dumped on me a whole heap and pile of faith. I don't have to question that anymore. It just works. Matter of fact, I kind of like it now when I feel that way because I know I'm going to meet somebody really, really special. I have a guy that I sponsor in... He just moved to Tennessee a few months ago. And this guy, I mean, you talk about a big book Nazi. I mean, you know, that's him, you know. And I'll stick with the Nazi, you know. This guy's a little rough around the edges, right? But this guy's passionate about this deal. And the last place he spoke in Dallas before he went, he kind of threw some sobriety hand grenades into the audience, you know. Ruffled a few feathers of the old timers, and you know, my sponsor's getting the calls, and he's like, you know, we have to talk with Jay before he goes out of town. He's gonna piss some folks off, you know. So you know, accountability's a bitch sometimes, and you know, he had to take a bite of that sandwich, you know, but we had a little game plan for when he went away to this new town and this new environment, because there's not big book thumpers everywhere. You know, there ain't fundamentalists everywhere, you know. I hear from the people that I've met here that y'all suffered from the same thing as we do back in the States. You know, a lot of the middle of the road stuff. And so we had a game plan, and his game plan was to go and kind of audit some of these groups and find some of these people who are of like-minded. Right, but his other priority was to rely on God and ask God to show him where he needs to go. And so he found a little wind-up joint, and he started taking a meeting there, just him. And little by slowly, he gets a prospect, and they go start going through the work, and all of a sudden, this prospect has a spiritual experience, and his life changes right before my guy's eyes, right? And now they've got two, and that two became four. And they started infiltrating, you know, now four at a group can start making a difference. Well, now that four grew into about 12, and they railroaded a group conscious, and now they got a big book study meeting, you know. But he didn't go there preaching, he didn't go there proselytizing, he just went there with the information and God in his heart. And that's what we do. You know, if I never make it to another meeting, I mean, I've been to three discussion meetings since I've been sober. And I was all out of town visiting. I don't go to there. My life is busy. My group meets three nights a week, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. The rest of the time, we're out there. We're out there on the firing line. And to see that ripple effect happen is truly, truly amazing. And I just challenge you personally, don't sit on the sideline. Be involved. Be a greeter. I mean, I got guys that I sponsor that will never get up at a podium, or at least never right now, you know. But should someone that I love dearly, a brother or sister or a close family friend or whatever, need and want this program, I would trust those people with those guys. They're excellent sponsors. But they didn't miss the boat. I held them accountable. They did the work, and they relied on God. They don't rely on me. But they got off their selfish, self-centered ass and did what they can to help somebody else. And that's a simple deal. And it doesn't stop and begin with Alcoholics Anonymous. It affects every aspect of my life. How can I be helpful to my employer? How can I be helpful to my family? How can I be helpful to my neighbors? I mean, let's think about it. We've all done a four-step. How many names did we have down on that four-step? Quite a lot. And if they think 10% of the population has this illness, all of our four steps times 10 or 20. You know what? Basically, the point I'm driving at is this illness affects everybody, one way or the other. The little lady in the grocery store, she may not be an alcoholic, her husband may not be an alcoholic, but maybe her kid was killed by a drunk driver. This illness touches everyone. So my job is to go out and help those people. You know, and I often think, and I'll end it here, but I often think, what would Bill Wilson or Dr. Bob or Clarence Snyder or Bill Dotson, what would they think today if they came and sat through some of our meetings? What would they think? Has the original intent and the original message been watered down? Are we doing our part? Are we upholding these principles? You know, I hear a lot of folks say, the treatment centers did this, the judges do this, whatever. We sat on our ass and let it happen. You know, when in the name of love and tolerance does it become apathy? Come on, man. Feel the love. I don't know how long I've spoke. I probably speak too long anyway. I'll end it here, and I'll do the big story tonight. But I want to say before I end here, I want to thank all of you for inviting us to come here. And it is truly, truly amazing to look around the room and to visit with you individually and see that the lights are on. It's very, very sad in my heart when I go to a group and there's no lights on. It's very, very sad when I see people sitting there gripping the table, holding on for dear life. Because that's not what this deal is about. This deal is about freedom. And Myers assured me when I got off the plane I would know God was here. And my friends picked me up from the airport and I took a breath of that Iceland air and I instantly knew God was here. And then coming to meet all of you folks and just sitting up here and looking out at you, the lights are on. So what are we going to do to keep it? That's all I got. Thank you for having me. Thank you.